Donald Trump will make separate visits to the southern border today to highlight the immigration crisis. UVA political analyst Larry Sabato.
President Biden and Democrats have fully recognized how important this issue is in the presidential campaign and how helpful it has been to Donald Trump and the Republican ticket as a whole.
In Gaza City, Palestinian officials say more than 100 people were killed, more than 700 wounded as they clamored for food handouts. Eyewitnesses say Israeli troops opened fire. The IDF blames injuries on pushing and trampling. There's a rare blizzard warning for California, Sierra Nevada. Sean Sullivan lives in Truckee.
Well, we're chopping firewood, making sure we have shovels, making sure we have all the food we need. We're all set.
They could get up to 12 feet of snow. It's expected to begin falling tomorrow night. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Police in Two Rivers say they're getting more tips and information about a missing 3-year-old boy since the FBI offered a $15,000 reward. Volunteer searchers combed several areas around Manitowoc County yesterday. Elijah Vu has been missing since Tuesday of last week. Law enforcement is still asking for the public's help. More electric buses are on the road in Wisconsin. Susan Mudd is an advocate with the Environmental Law and Policy Center.
Riders on buses, including the drivers, will experience zero tailpipe emissions, which they now do because fumes, unfortunately, often get recirculated.
Mudd's group is asking utilities to help build charging stations for schools and bus companies. Vehicles have overtaken power plants as America's largest source of carbon emissions. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. Altoona Fire and Rescue is planning on moving into two different buildings now that their current building is not equipped to keep up with their growth. According to city officials, one of the new department buildings will be just down the street at 2000 Spooner Street, and the other will be shared with Public Works. Fire officials say their current building doesn't even have enough space for the trucks, ambulances, and boats that the department needs, let alone the roughly 50 part-time and full-time employees. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has signed the legislation to reallocate $15 million to emergency departments in the Chippewa Valley. The move comes as local and state officials scramble to find solutions for the impending closure of all HSHS and Prevea facilities in the region. Governor Evers used line item vetoes to provide additional flexibility for how the $15 million can be used so local health officials can identify where it's needed. The funding was originally meant for HSHS to expand its psychiatric care. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
Matt Nair on air.
Hovde, Eric Hovde now. He will be running against Tammy Baldwin.
He's not a Wisconsinite. He threw his hat in the ring from California. This is Tim Michaels all over again. Businessman who walks in and goes, well, I can take care of this. And Wisconsin says, no. Good to know you. Here's some Kringle. Go back home.
Is that how we politely blow people off now? Is to take a Kringle and go away.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Packers restructure a player's contract. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports reporting from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis. The Packers here meeting with players' agents have made a deal with linebacker Preston Smith to pay him more with incentives, but save $2 million off their salary cap. What other changes on defense? I spoke to Packers GM Brian Gutekunst.
Not a ton. You know, I think, you know, this league's a 4-2-5 nickel league, but those conversations will be had over the next few weeks.
NBA, the Bucks in Charlotte to play the Hornets again. Milwaukee looking to go 4-0 after the All-Star break. Doc Rivers says they're doing better each day defensively. Baseball, the Brewers with a 6-1 loss to the Cubs, but the crew auditioned 10 different pitchers, including J.J. Bukauskas, who struck out all three batters he faced. He's only given up one hit in camp so far. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
He's throwing the ball good. I remember him throwing the ball good last year at the end. He'll be in the major leagues this year at some point.
That's the Brewers' Pat Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
We We are going to warm things up in a hurry today. Mostly sunny. We'll get to 49 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the south at around 5 to 15. Clear tonight, 33. Tomorrow, sunny, 55. We'll get to 62 Saturday. Sunday, partly cloudy with afternoon showers and a high near 70. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now, 6.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. Biomarker testing was a turning point for me. By working with my oncologist, we were able to determine the most appropriate treatment plan. My fear was I wasn't going to be here to see my children grow up. That gave me hope, knowing that I have that chance, and I did. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center. The entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5 The Tap.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up? This
is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Earl. How are you?
Man, the sun is shining, man. Everything else is all right. As long it, I was just listening, man. They said 10 degrees, man.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to warm up a little bit more today than it was yesterday, though.
Yeah, it is, man. But, you know, you think 10 degrees is. But, man, the sun, just the sun, and plus knowing we're going to get up to about 40 late, you know, high 40s and early 50s is enough to just hold us over. Man, looking down the road, 50, 60 degrees. And we won't be worrying about the 10 degrees we're dealing with now. But anyway, good morning to everybody, as always. And I want to welcome back my special guest, Mr. Reggie Jackson of Reggie Jackson, Inc. Good morning to you, Reggie. How you doing, man?
I'm great, Earl. Thanks. Good to be back with you.
It's always great to have you around. For people who don't know, you're a nationally recognized writer. You're a nationally recognized orator, speaker, all those different things. Your article appears in the Independent.
Yeah, the Milwaukee Independent.
Yeah, how do people get access to the Milwaukee Independent?
MilwaukeeIndependent.com, and they can go to the website. It's an online magazine, and they can just search for my name, and they'll see all of the articles I've written since back in 2016.
So for people who don't know, this is the last day of 2024 is Black History Month. I've had you on now. I think this is the third time this month. And for people who haven't heard you, tell us a little about Reggie Jackson.
Well, I'm a native of Mississippi. Moved to Milwaukee when I was about 7 years old, back in the early 70s. You know, I spent some time during the course of my life. I served in the Navy for 6 years. I've also been a public school teacher. I was a teacher for 8 years in Milwaukee Public Schools. I was adjunct professor at Concordia University for 3 years back in 2008 to 2010. Taught courses on intro to sociology and American contemporary social problems. I served as a volunteer at America's Black Holocaust Museum for nearly 20 years. Served 2 terms as board president at the museum as well. I've been following in footsteps of the founder of the museum, Dr. James Cameron, my mentor and good friend. And I do this work, anti-racism work, very specifically because I'm trying to honor the memory of my ancestors and the trials and tribulations that they've endured, the resilience that they've shown me during the course of my life. And I'm paying it back to them.
Yeah. You know, for those who don't know, you've traveled all over the state, talking about, you know, history and the fact that we can't seem to get together in this country, people of color and majority communities just can't seem to work differences out. You don't accept that, do you?
I don't accept that. You know, as I've traveled around the state over the last 20 years, I've been in over 50 communities, you know, having conversations, very open and honest conversations about issues related to race and racism. And I've been welcomed with open arms to those communities, Earl. People have asked me to come back multiple times. In fact, I'll be going back up to Wausau this summer to talk about the history of Juneteenth. Some folks that I met up there the last time I was in Wausau about 5 years ago have invited me to come back. I'll be traveling to Eau Claire in April to speak at a conference there as well. So, you know, I found that all these places I've gone, Earl, that despite what people say about people not wanting to talk about certain issues, I found that people are, you know, they have this huge desire to talk about certain things and they want to talk to someone who brings some level of expertise, and they keep inviting me back to have those conversations because they know that I have a very open and honest approach to having these conversations.
You know, Reggie, we can't get over what we know is a stain in this country's history, as well as present with racial issues in this country. The rest of the world is aware of it, and yet we can't seem to have the dialogue and conversation in this country. Why?
Well, as a nation, we've denied this history. We've denied, you know, the injustices. We've told the world and ourselves that, you know, America stands for freedom, justice, and liberty for all. Even though we knew it wasn't true, we continued to spout that off. And, you know, eventually people began to open up some books and read about the history and say, wait a minute, that doesn't seem to fit with the reality of what happened in American history. And so people don't like to question that. And now I think more often than not, people are questioning that story. And it's becoming a difficult conversation for those who want to believe that old version of American history. It's becoming difficult for them to hear that, you know, that wasn't the way it was. That's not how some people saw it. That's not the perspective some people are bringing to the conversation nowadays. So that's what makes the conversations hard, is that some people just aren't willing to accept that, you know, all of our lived experiences, Earl, determine how we see and interact with the world around us. And all of us have different lived experiences. And one of the things that I've discovered traveling around the state of Wisconsin is the diversity of lived experiences people have had. People in different parts of the state have completely different perspectives on the world around them based on their history in that particular place. And so I'm always, you know, of the mindset that if we continue to go to these different places and have these conversations and learn from each other, then we'll be a better state moving forward.
Well, you know, it's the history of the nation is not just interwoven in Wisconsin's relationship with people of color in the majority community. It's throughout the entire nation. It's the same thing, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Wisconsin isn't much different than Minnesota or Iowa, North Dakota, Montana, you know, Vermont, New Hampshire, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi. Right. You know, I oftentimes joke with people that my nickname for Wisconsin is Mississippi, because we are such a segregated state. We don't like to think about it. We don't like to really see that. But, you know, black people only make up about 6% of the population of the state of Wisconsin.
Most people don't know that.
6%, only 6%. You know, I've asked this question as I've traveled from town to town, and people, you know, often think that black people are like half of the population of Wisconsin. I'm like, it's not even close. And a majority of black people in the state of Wisconsin live in Milwaukee. Like 60% of all black people in the state live in the city of Milwaukee. There are about 340,000 black people in the state, and about 218,000 live in the city of Milwaukee. So we are not dispersed evenly around the state of Wisconsin. You know, as I travel to these places, Earl, I meet white people that say, Reggie, you know, I really wish, you know, there were more black people here so I could have conversations with them about certain topics. You know, I wish I had a black friend to talk to about these things. And I joke with people like, listen, man, there's not enough black people for every white person to have a black friend. There's just not enough of us to go around for everybody. But you can learn a lot about, you know, the experience of people from a group other than yours by reading the things that they write about themselves, you know, listening to podcasts that they make. There's tremendous scholarship about every group of people in the United States. People are constantly telling their stories. It's easy to find stuff if you're looking for it without having a person, you know, as a friend to talk to.
If you had just joined us, my guest is Reggie Jackson, again, a historian, an educator, a writer, award-winning in all those different areas. So what we want people to understand who don't get to see us in the state, which is the majority of the people in the state, we want the same thing that other people want.
Absolutely.
Right?
You know,
there's no difference.
There's no difference. I mean, you know, as I travel around the country, even early, I meet people that have the same goals in life. Everybody wants to have the same type of, you know, existence in this country. They want to, you know, be a part of what America offers, you know, take advantage of the great things that this country offers. They want it to be shared, you know, equitably with everybody, that no group of people should be shut out from having access to these things that are the American dream. That's what everybody wants. I don't care what, you know, labels we put on people. Everybody pretty much wants the same things.
And the fact that in the wealthiest nation on earth, there is enough to go around, right?
There's more than enough abundance. There's a tremendous amount of abundance if it's shared on a more equitable, you know, in a more equitable way. But we know that that's just not the case across the United States.
So as you are a guy who's often pretty hopeful. But in this instance, do you see a time, a point in time, where we may get beyond where we are now?
Well, you know, just because of the nature of the work that I do, traveling and talking about these things, or I have to keep at some point in the back of my mind a sense of optimism about the future. I mean, it wouldn't make sense for me to do the work, to travel and talk to people if I didn't. But at the same time, I tell people I'm not a pessimist, I'm not an optimist, I'm a realist. I look at the real world. I look at the reality of people's lived experiences, and it leads me to feel a sense of dread about, you know, where we're going as a nation in terms of where we are currently, in terms of having such difficulty accepting that other people see the world differently than we do, and just, you know, not being mad about it, just accepting that, okay, everybody can see the world in a different way and I can be okay with that. That's what I'm hoping that we move towards, but we're moving in the wrong direction in many respects.
You know, Reggie, when you have conversations and dialogues with people who really in their hearts want to know and want to heal wounds, and who really want to there to be peace and equity, because there are more people who feel that way than people who don't, I would venture to say, when you have these conversations
absolutely.
And dialogues with
you
people.
Know, the people that I meet as I travel around the state are generally people that want to have that. I don't encounter a lot of people that, you know, push back against
that. That stiff-necked and hard-hearted and those kind of things. 844-967-2789. My guess is Reggie Jackson of Reggie Jackson, Inc. You can join the conversation. 844-967. You're tuned in to 540 AM WAUK on Civic Media and 101 FM, the show. What's going on?
This is 93.5 The Tap.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. 120,000 miles of night drives, daily commutes, and who knows how many.
Are we there yet?
Through countless fixes, elbow grease, and a new radiator, you kept your ride alive. With eBay Motors, you have over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus, at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
can't believe tax season is here already. But look at all this info I have to enter.
Phil's small accounting firm is growing in numbers.
Why didn't I take that typing class in high school?
A data entry specialist could really help him in a crunch.
I got blisters on my fingers!
Indeed can help him hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. You can schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from your employer dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
I can't get off my horse, and I can't let you go. You are the one who, you are the one who makes me feel so real. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, what am I supposed to do? Oh, what am I supposed to do, baby, when I'm so hooked up on you? Then I realize.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Reggie Jackson. You know, Reggie, when you run across people who are sincere and as you stated, majority of the people who you have these dialogues and conversations with, they're very sincere. They don't know. They haven't been around people of color their entire lives. And so they're interested, but they get information from anywhere they can get it from. So how do you, when you're having that conversation with somebody who's in that situation, how do you begin it?
Well, to me, it's always the same. It's an inquisitive conversation, Earl. You know, people want to know about my lived experiences and why I see the world in the way that I do. And I ask them about their experiences right. And why they see the world in the way that they do. I respect the way people see the world based on their lived experiences, because those are things that in many cases we don't have any control over. You know, the community we were raised in, the family we were born into, we don't have any control over those things. And those things dictate how we see the world around us. So I can't judge somebody and say that your views are wrong because I haven't walked in your shoes, but I can listen to why you see the world in the way that you do and respect those opinions, whether I agree with them or not. It doesn't matter. I can respect your opinion.
Right.
And I expect the same in return.
Right.
You know, I've always believed, and I used to teach this to my students, that, you know, when you respect people, people return that respect. And that's the way that I have those conversations. I always like to ask people questions about why they see things in the way that they do, Earl.
You know, Reggie, when you begin to have these conversations, what crops up and pops up a lot of times is guilt. And as I always say, there shouldn't be that, because people of today didn't create what happened, you know, 400 years ago, 500 years ago. They didn't create it. And so they're not responsible for that aspect of it.
Right.
But things of today, that's a different story.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're responsible for what's happening in the world we live in. We can't go back and build a time machine and go back and change things from 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200, 300, 400. We can't do that. But we have to accept that that was the reality at that particular time and acknowledge it in a truthful way. And I think many people aren't willing to acknowledge it in a truthful way. That, you know, certain things that have been very harmful to certain groups of people have happened in this country's history. That's okay to say that. No country in the history of humanity, no group of people have come together and been perfect, Earl. There are always flaws in every society. There are always times when certain groups of people are treated poorly. And that's just the nature of humans. That's the way we do things. And we can't seem to help ourselves. There's always this man inhumanity. Man's inhumanity to man is a constant theme in any society that you study. You know, I love history because it teaches me that things that are happening today are oftentimes that we see as novel, as new to us, are things that have happened many times in the past. You know, people say that history repeats itself. I don't believe that. I believe that people repeat themselves. People have patterns, live patterns, and we repeat those patterns over and over again in different places around the world. When you study the history of people in any part of the world, you find very similar histories in terms of how people have been very willing to mistreat people and to find a way to justify that mistreatment in some way, shape, or form.
Let's go to the phone lines. And Tom from L.A., good morning to you, Tom. Your thoughts?
Good morning. Thank you again, Reggie, and thanks, Earl. First of all, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. It's not the corporations that we should be answering to, or politicians should be answering to. It's we the people. Second, I don't know. I have a question and then a comment and a question. I don't know if it was worse growing up in a town of 2000 in Wisconsin and being invisible to the masses about my orientation, or if it would be better to be not invisible as a Black person living in a smaller community, growing up in the smaller community, you know, that's there. I do know that when I came out of the closet, there were lots of people, because I was older then, of course. You weren't a young kid then. But when I came out of the closet, it was, I had more questions. Like, I was this alien. Things I didn't even know how to answer myself, because I grew up in this small town in Wisconsin. But I found that people were very inquisitive. They wanted to know, like, why this? Why that? Why do you guys do this? Blah, blah, blah. And I just find it really interesting when you look at, like you're saying, I always say every 100 years, just different characters. But I'm trying to, because I agree with you, Reggie. I think that what needs to happen is we need to have more exposure in the state of Wisconsin, not just to the Green Bay Packers football team, but actually to people of color in other areas. I think for some reason, from a perspective of someone that grew up in these small towns, we think of Milwaukee as an extension of Chicago. Like, Chicago was where all Black people lived, and then they kind of went to Milwaukee. Again, that's a childish view of looking at things, but it's the way my experiences were. Also, I was wondering, Reggie, if you could talk about before the Black people were sold into slavery and brought to the United States, were they living like just regular middle class lives, you know, the people before they were sold into slavery, or were they, you know, living very, very, you know, wealthy lives, or what was it like in Africa, you know, before they were actually sold into slavery?
So Tom, thank you very much for that. We'll let Reggie certainly respond. You know, the only thing that I would say is the focus should be beyond Wisconsin. Because it's across the entire nation, Black people only make up 12-14% of the entire population of this nation. So it's the same reality, no matter where it is, with beliefs that people have when we're talking about people of color. 844-967-2789, text us or give us a call. News, weather, and sports, my guess is Reggie Jackson.
Thank you. Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The city of Janesville is planning to buy the site of the former GM plant to try to revive development there. The plant was closed in 2008 and demolished 10 years later. All that's there now is 250 acres of concrete debris and contaminated soil. City officials say they'll spend the next year gathering information and community input. It's been more than a week now since anyone's seen 3-year-old Elijah Vu from Two Rivers. His grandmother made an emotional plea at a press conference this week.
I want my grandson to be home, raise my family. So I want everybody to continue. Don't stop.
His mother and her boyfriend are in jail on child neglect charges. There's a $15,000 reward for information that helps find Elijah. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. A multi-year construction project on I-94 is set to get underway on Monday. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers signed a nearly $70 million contract for the project, which will make a variety of improvements on I-94 between the U.S. 53 interchange in Eau Claire and Mallard Road in Clear Creek. Some of the projects include resurfacing stretches of road, widening the bridge over Otter Creek, and repairing storm sewers. Officials say two lanes of traffic will be maintained during construction, going both east and west. Chippewa Falls parents will get more transparency from the Chippewa Falls Area Unified School District going forward. At a school board meeting on Tuesday, parents expressed their concerns regarding an incident at the middle school last fall, which the school did not notify parents about. The district says student safety was accounted for and the situation didn't require the district to notify parents. The school board passed a motion to compile policies from other districts and create a new policy for greater transparency. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
The Todd Allbus Show.
Green Bay's a fine town, but I'm just telling you, you're better off to take a horse. Don't drive in Green Bay, and for God's sake, don't get a parking ticket. So how about this? We find out how much revenue does Green Bay get from parking tickets, and we say that the Packers are going to donate that, and we're going to have free parking in Green Bay. How about that? Todd for mayor of Green Bay.
The Todd Allbus Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Are you curious to see what a Liam Neeson movie where they don't threaten his family looks like? Your wish has been granted. The action star will play the lead in a reboot of the film Naked Gun next summer. The original Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad was written and produced by a trio of Wisconsinites, including the Zucker Brothers and Jim Abrams. The film was released in 1988 and starred Leslie Nielsen. The Naked Gun reboot is set for release July 18th, 2025. In somewhat famous person news, Carmen Electra has legally changed her name to Carmen Electra. The actress told the Today Show recently that her real name is Tara Lee Patrick. She says while auditioning for a Prince project, he looked at her and said, "You're not a Tara, you're a Carmen." Then later told her Electra should be her name. Of course, she took his advice. The man is a genius. But frankly, any of those are better than Mrs. Dennis Rodman. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We are going to warm things up in a hurry today. Mostly sunny. We'll get to 49 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the south at around 5 to 15. Clear tonight, 33. Tomorrow, sunny, 55. We'll get to 62 Saturday. Sunday, partly cloudy with afternoon showers and a high near 70. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now is 10.
Now. We tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But right now in front of us is victory over cancer. Right now, cancer research funded by the V Foundation is leading to better treatments and saving lives. Victory over cancer is there for the taking by you, because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory. Learn more at V.org.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Tell a friend what's on tap. There's a new station in town with conversation about Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Mama line out in old New Orleans, strutting her stuff on the
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Reggie Jackson and of Reggie Jackson, Inc., a historian, writer. And so Reggie, before we had that short break, Tom from L.A. had a couple questions. Do you remember those questions?
Yeah, Tom asked me to talk about what life was like for you know, people in Africa before, you know, the transatlantic slave trade. And, you know, one thing I want to just share with Tom, you know, maybe people aren't aware, you know, Africa is the second largest continent on the planet Earth. There are nearly a billion people living in Africa today. Africa, prior to the transatlantic slave trade, when the Portuguese, Spanish, French, English, the Dutch came there to steal people away, there were thousands of different societies that existed in Africa.
So continent, not nation.
Right. Yeah. You know, many people think Africa is a country.
Yeah.
Africa is a continent with over 50 independent nations today. But, you know, back at that time, there were thousands of different societies throughout Africa, and all of them were different. They were all independent in their own way. And there's no very specific way that all people in Africa live this way or that way. It's just like any other place on the planet Earth. There's a continuum of living, you know, people. Some people are living in, you know, societies where they're farmers. You had some people that were fishermen. You had some people, you know, that were hunters. You had a variety of different types of lifestyles that people led. Some people were very wealthy. Some people were exceptionally poor. You know, it's there's no very specific way that you say, well, all Africans live this way. It would be ridiculous to even say that, because there were so many diverse groups of people that live there with their own way of doing things. It's impossible to really answer this question, because there's, you know, we'd be here for the next 27 weeks, Earl, talking about all these different societies that existed in Africa.
Well, I mean, as you stated, no different than any other society, an amalgamation of people. And if you look at any amalgamation of people, there are people who live in different, on different levels there. But I get Tom's point. And I would venture to say that when we don't know these things aren't taught in this country, because they don't have any value to many in this country. And Africa's history is not taught.
Yeah, I'm glad that Tom has his curiosity. You know, Tom, take that curiosity and go and look for scholarship about African societies, you know, prior to the transatlantic slave trade. There's a lot of great scholarship out there about that. You know, there's a lot you can learn. I'm glad you have that curiosity, because I think it's important for us to be curious about, you know, everybody. I'm curious about everybody, Earl.
So let me ask you, Reggie, there right now is a fear across this nation of blacks, based on the fact that we are seen as people who are, you know, lawless, you know, robbing, shooting, you know, uneducated criminals. And so we see that the media play it out everywhere.
Yeah, you know, those things that you mentioned, Earl, are not a part of black society. Those are parts of American society. The things that happen in black community are microcosms of things that happen throughout America. Crime is a feature of America. Going back, you know, hundreds of years, crime has always existed. It's not something that's unique to any community. When you think about people killing people, robbing people, people of all races and nationalities do those things. You just don't always hear about them. And, you know, if you live in the state of Wisconsin, wherever you live, you're generally going to hear about things that happen in Milwaukee. Milwaukee is the biggest city in the state. You're going to hear about those things wherever you live. But people in Milwaukee are not going to hear about things that happen in Eau Claire or Wausau, Burlington, Janesville. We don't get that news. So we don't hear that, you know, these things are happening, you know, in communities that are mostly white communities around the state. We don't hear those things because they're not broadcast by the media.
You know, and this misguided belief. So black people kill one another because that's where they live. That's
right.
Who they're engaged with every day.
It's the same for every group. Most people are killed by somebody from the same racial background as themselves, Earl. Most people are killed by somebody they know. You know, it's rare that people are killed by strangers. Most people know the people that they have interactions with on a regular basis. And so if you're in a community that's all white or all black or whatever, those people you encounter, those are the people you're most likely to have interactions with. And, you know, some good interactions, some bad interactions. It's very rare that people go outside of their communities in a large way and do those things.
So we just saw a group of teens from Chicago, and I think it was here in Waukesha. They stole these really expensive cars and were led police on a chase. And so they continue to show that. You continue to see that. And that's not representing the masses of our young people.
That's representing those handful of young men, a group of what? It wasn't even 10 of them. It was what? Eight, I think.
Right.
Eight young men. That's not a representation of all black people or all black people of that age group. It's just a small, very, very exceptionally small group of individuals who made a choice to do those things.
But when that is continue to be displayed over and over and over, it sends a message. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah, it reinforces the stereotypes that people have of young black men, because it gives them further so-called evidence of that's who they are, that's what they do. No, that's what those individuals decided to do. That's not what black people do, young black people do. That's what those individuals chose to do. They made an individual choice, each of them, to commit those crimes.
Reggie, once a month, as long as I'm on the airwaves, I think it's critically important that, you know, these conversations, especially during Black History Month, even though I think these are conversations that we should be willing to have daily, it shouldn't be just encompassed in a month. Let's talk a little bit about your thoughts on whether or not this once a month, once a year, this 1 month is the time we should set aside to be willing to have conversations like this.
Well, you know, when we think about the history of what became Black History Month, Earl, you look back at the founder of the month and what he did back in 1926 when he created the first, what he called Negro History Week, was basically take what people around the country have been doing for years since emancipation, celebrating, you know, our worth as a people, celebrating the contributions we made to American history, celebrating the progress that we've made since slavery ended. And he basically saw that people were doing this celebration around the country. And he said, why don't we formalize this celebration and you know, create some scholarship around, you know, this history.
Carter G. Woodson.
Dr. Carter G. Woodson. Right. And so he started Negro History Week. He started the Negro History Bulletin. He wanted to find a way to provide scholarship to include in schools. So when people are writing curriculum for the schools, when people are writing history books, that they include these stories as well. He said it wasn't about black history. It's about blacks in history. And so he said, you know, he wants this celebration to continue, but he says, I don't want it to be, you know, stuck in 1 month. I want us to be able and willing to realize that these are things that we should appreciate and celebrate year round, because this is just American history. And so the way I look at it, Earl, is I find that, you know, for the most part, I don't really like Black History Month, because I think it's become trivialized. It's more like Black Trivia Month from what I see most of the material out there about it. And I'm coming up with this concept that I'm developing for my company that's called Black History 365. Teaching people how they can appreciate and share the stories of black history, you know, every day of the year, that we don't have to wait till February to talk about it. We can talk about it every day of the year. There are so many things that we could talk about, so many things we could share, that it doesn't make sense that we just talk about it in February.
You know, and it's not just the fact that people, that you want to educate the white community about black history. Black people don't know about black history.
Yeah, you know, our history is a very unique history. And, you know, we have not been in a situation here in this country where our history has been appreciated has been, you know, shared in our history classes. And so, you know, just like white people, we haven't learned these things in our history classes either. Most of what I know about Black history, Earl, are not things I learned in school. I didn't learn them in K through 12 school. I didn't learn them in college. You know, when I was going to school to be a history teacher in college, I didn't learn these things. I've learned most of what I know from independent research. You know, I love to read. I read all the time. And, you know, my wife can tell you, she's tired of me buying new books. I'm constantly trying to reinforce my understanding by learning more all the time. There's so much just great scholarship out there, Earl. It's overwhelming, the amount of scholarship that's out there. We can learn every day. I try to be a lifelong learner. And I taught this to my students when I was a teacher. Learn something new every single day, because that adds value to who you are as a person. It enriches the way you see the world around you.
You know, Reggie, America, a melting pot. America is a very special nation. Sometimes I think the Americans, people don't even know how special a nation America is. The entire human family is here.
We are the most diverse country on the planet Earth by far.
We're the whole human family.
Absolutely.
Here in America. And so sometimes I think we don't understand that the special kind of way that we have come together and we're brought together, I think it's an experiment.
Yeah, I don't think that we've embraced or appreciated the diversity that America has, or we haven't embraced that, wrapped our arms around it and said that this is wonderful. We haven't done that.
No, man. It's an experiment, because there's no other nation on earth that compares to this nation with the whole human family being here. If we took advantage of that and cultivated what that could be, to have the entire human family in one place, collectively working together and creating an environment, utopia could be here, and then could be spread all over the earth if we only understood and if we only knew. But we haven't been able to take advantage of that for various reasons. 844-967-2789 is the number. My guest is the one and only Reggie Jackson. You can join us. Tune into the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, the Chippewa Valley's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media Radio Network recognizes the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Kelvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Echoes of Empowerment, Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl Ingram.
It's Oscar season. And since the award started in 1929, more than 3,000 Oscars have been awarded. But only 60 have been won by Black actors. The first Black woman to win Best Lead Actress was Halle Berry for the film Monsters Ball in 2002. Denzel Washington earned Best Lead Actor for Training Day also in 2002, marking the first time both of the top Oscars were won by African Americans. That hasn't happened since. Listening for more Black History stories here on Civic Media, I'm Earl Ingram.
The Tap.
It's a family affair. It's a family affair.
One child grows up to be somebody that just loves to learn at
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guess is Reggie Jackson. You know, Reggie, as we get ready to wrap this up, what do you want to say? You've certainly, this is the third week you've been here. We've covered a lot of territory, but I haven't given you an opportunity to just have a dialogue with the audience, of kind of a conversation, a fireside chat, if you will, these last few minutes that you normally have with an audience across the state. What do you want to say?
Yeah, I want to say that, you know, I appreciate the variety of lived experiences people have, you know, based on the backgrounds they have. And I want to be inquisitive and learn more about people. I enjoy being here with you and having the callers call in. You know, I want to hear people's perspectives. I want to give people space to tell me how they feel about things. And I want to share with them why I see the world in the way that I do based on my lived experiences. Because I think that it's, you know, conducive to better relations when people can have a decent conversation with each other. You know, part of what I've done, you know, over the last 6 years, six plus years doing diversity, equity, inclusion training is teaching people how to have, you know, productive conversation with each other, where they're not arguing with each other. They're not trying to debate each other. They're simply having a conversation, trying to get to know each other. And that, to me, is one of the most valuable things we can do as members of American society, is to learn how to have a conversation with somebody without trying to debate people, without trying to prove that I'm right and you're wrong. Learning to listen to people, that's not something that we do very well as Americans. We don't know how to listen to people. We don't like to listen to people. We prefer to talk without listening. So I've taught people how to have these conversations, Earl. And one of the ways that we've done this is to introduce to people, you know, this idea that all of us come from kind of common situations in many respects. All of us have been in some way, shape, or form othered by other people for one reason or another. You know, when I was a kid, Earl, growing up, you know, I had the name of a famous baseball player, Reggie Jackson, right? But I was an absolutely horrible baseball player. I was terrible at baseball, right? And so my classmates would let me have it, you know, when we were in gym class and I couldn't hit the baseball. So I was othered because I couldn't play baseball. You know, some people are othered for other reasons. You know, you may be the, you know, the only black kid in the class, or the only Jewish kid, or the only Mexican kid. You know, you may be the only, you know, female that can play basketball really well. You know, a variety of different reasons that people treat us differently. We've all been othered. And I like to hear those stories of when people have been othered, when they've been treated differently, and ask them, you know, how did it feel? What did you do about it? And who helped you out of that situation? Because that, to me, is a way of bringing us all together, realizing that we all have these similarities. Instead of looking at differences all the time, think about the things we have in common. You know, all of us are capable of being othered by people during the course of our lives. It often happens during our childhood, and we don't think about those things. We don't talk to each other about those things, how those things made us feel. And, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, it made me feel terrible when I was a kid and I couldn't play baseball and got teased about it, bullied about it, you know, joked about it. It made me feel terrible. And I didn't really know how to handle it. You know, I would talk to some of my teachers and ask for advice about, you know, how do I get these kids to stop teasing me about this? But I never really got really, really good advice. I learned as an adult how to handle those situations and how to talk to people about handling those situations. And that's part of what I do as I travel around the state of Wisconsin, is I want to hear those stories of people when they were othered, so they can see how easy it is to be the victim of being othered, being treated differently because of something that you oftentimes have no control over, because those are the essence of our lived experiences. You know, we all have different lived experiences. And we have to embrace the fact that two people growing up in a similar place can have completely different, you know, lived experiences. We can have conversations and you know, be curious about, you know, why people, you know, live a particular way, why people see things a particular way. Ask questions, Earl. I believe it's important to ask questions.
You know, Reggie, I believe that we need to break the yoke, and I believe that it's just nonsensical that people continue to go to their graves not willing to have dialogue and conversation with other human beings. It's nonsensical to me that we take these things from birth to death, never willing to have the conversation and dialogue, and then we hang that albatross around the neck of the generations that come after us. And it just continues to go on and on and on because people aren't willing to have the dialogue and the conversation. To me, that's just nonsensical, man. It always has been, and it always continues to be, and you even see it with children today. We're not preparing them to get beyond, you know, the original sins that many of us have. We need to prepare them to live in a better world, in a world that doesn't judge people based on those things, right? Can't we do that?
Absolutely. It's much easier than we make it out to be, Earl. It's not that hard. You know, we need to begin to be, you know, introspective, I think, as Americans. We don't like to kind of think about ourselves and how we interact with the world around us and ask why we say the things we say, why we feel the things that we feel. We need to teach young people, children in our lives, you know, to be introspective and to ask questions. You know, when I was a kid, Earl, and you probably remember this, it was probably the same when you were a kid, you know, as a child, you weren't allowed to be a part of adult conversations, right? You know, you were made to leave the room when adults were talking.
Right.
You know, to me, that was a huge mistake because, you know, that natural curiosity that children have should be, you know, nurtured. We should nurture the curiosity that children have. Children ask questions about, you know, why the world works the way that it does. We shouldn't, you know, stray away from that. We should be, you know, intelligent enough to understand that they have these questions because they're curious, and let's give them a good answer so they can continue to be curious and ask even more questions. That's how you nurture children.
You know, Reggie, I think it's pretty clear that America is a better place after having had these types of conversations, and will continue to be a better place, but we've got to continue to have the dialogue all along the way and not bury it. Thank you, man, as always. Really appreciate it. We'll stay in touch.
Absolutely, Earl. Looking forward to it.
That's Reggie Jackson. Trust you enjoy the last 3 weeks with him. It won't be the last. Up next, news, weather, and sports.
Tapped in to the issues affecting the Valley and all of Wisconsin. Consider us the bartenders of friendly local talk. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Today, young adults face big questions about their future. How will you make your mark? Do you want to be part of something bigger than yourself? Are you ready to learn new skills and make new friendships? Perhaps you have a dream that you're ready to make real. So, how will you make a mark with your future? As you embark on a journey toward finding these answers, the military can serve as a resource for providing help, information, and opportunities. A public service message from the Department of Defense. To learn more, visit todaysmilitary.com.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Palestinian officials say more than 100 people were killed in an attack in Gaza City as they clamored for food aid. Israeli government spokesperson